Welcome to the Rambling Ranger podcast, episode 21. My name is Luke Taylor, and for this episode, I'm joined by another current colleague, our senior ranger, Roger Powell.
Hello.
Roger is one of these characters that I think I previously mentioned on the podcast when I had Mike on, another senior ranger. So unfortunately, you're not the first senior ranger we've had on the podcast. Yep. We'll touch on that. Of course, senior ranger being a kind of, well, you'll know yourself, a dwindling position within many ranger services in Scotland.
Yeah.
So, to have, I suppose, yourself and Mike over in Clanmurshill, shows the changes that have happened, I suppose, over the years. But we'll get into that. But how about just start off with telling us a bit about yourself?
Okay, yeah, so Roger Powell, I'm Senior Countryside Ranger for East Lothian Council. I've been here as Ranger and Senior Ranger for, in March it'll be 30 years.
Yes.
So it's been quite a while, although it seems to have gone very, very quickly, I think. You look back, you see 30 years and you think, really? Have I been there that long? And lots of changes through all that time. Before that, I started off as in a ranger career as a seasonal ranger in Mid Lothian, based at Vogley Country Park, which I got an extension till Christmas on, which was quite handy because I didn't know what I was going to be doing after that. Just after Christmas, I started work for the SWT with what was the old UK 2000 unit, which was the money that had been given by the government for unemployed people to come and find, do training and things for various jobs. And we had a ranger team, which was based in Holyrood Park.
Right.
So we used to run around Holyrood Park taking walks and all that sort of bits and pieces, did anyway, as part of their training, which was quite good. They were a good team. But I was only there for about a year before this job came up, and it seemed too good an opportunity to miss with all the coastal stuff. And I have a background in coastal biology, because previous to becoming a ranger, I'd done a PhD in a marine biology subject. Mm. That's pretty much my background.
Yeah, I mean, we'll come into obviously your marine kind of background in a bit, but I suppose the incredible part to touch on here, a bit like our one of our previous guests, George Potts, is from my knowledge and from just knowing the rangers that I know in Scotland. I mean, you are still one of the, I think, longest serving rangers in a position. I'd like to challenge if I can find anyone else. I mean, I can think of one or two maybe other people, but just having that, you've probably saw more changes than anyone else, but also the fact that obviously you're still working within a ranger team is a fantastic thing. I think I remember someone actually mentioning the stuff that you mentioned in Holyrood Park. I can't remember who it was. It was probably someone, either Martin or Jeff, that we had on the podcast previously. But that was a nice bit of work that was talked about there. So, of course, you've been that 30 years, obviously, here, which is a very long time. But you touched on there your previous background in marine stuff. So, did that lead up to then you becoming a ranger, or was a ranger always something that you potentially knew about? Or
it was something I'd looked at. I'd looked at things like working with the RSPB and things like that when I was a kid. I was a member of the Young Ornithologist Club. Birds was my thing, although I was never became an expert. Not like John, who's, I went to university, did zoology degree. And I really quite liked the sort of research angle on that one. So I had two options, really. One was, investigating whether wardening or rangering is one, or the research was the other. Mm. When I finished my degree, it was all sort of on behaviour and ecology, and it was largely on terrestrial and things like that. And this opportunity for a PhD post suddenly came up.
Right.
Last minute thing. And it was on two things I said I didn't really want to do, which was one was marine biology and two was looking down microscopes. And I ended up doing marine biology and looking down microscopes. And it was great. I loved it.
Wow.
So I did investigate for a while whether I could continue that line of, of you know, research or whatever, and there were one or two posts came up which passed me by. And in the end I went back and said, do you know what, you know, Brain Dream was something I'd thought about ages ago, let's see. And I applied for a seasonal job and got it without any sort of, you know, this really annoys a lot of people who struggle to get full-time jobs and things, or
more so
or even
now,
seasonal
yeah.
jobs and things. You know, I walked into a seasonal job, you know, 32 years ago, without any really rangering experience, other than knowing what the job entailed, of course, and that. But so yeah, I got through that way.
But the scene was different then, and that's maybe something you can touch on. I mean, it's a completely, as George touched on, in our episode with him explaining kind of the lead up to Ranger stuff in the 80s, and particularly how a lot of people coming into post then were from completely, like, there wasn't necessarily a core Ranger services or teams, or there was ones that had, you know, not been around that long in comparison to now.
When I came in, certainly when I came into the East Lothian, you know, I was working with people who had come straight into Ranger posts from completely different backgrounds, because there were no there wasn't any, you know, training for Rangers or anything like that in those days. You know, I think, you know, one of my colleagues back then had done things like sheet metal working or something, you know, the things like that, you know. And you know, our current manager, you know, came into Rangering, you know, having no background in that really at all. You know, he didn't know exactly knew what a Ranger did, but he the job came up and he decided to take it. I'm a little bit later than that, but there were quite a few seasonal posts around at the time when I came in, it was certainly strange working here compared to now, because, you know, we had four full-time staff. There was a Ranger in the East, a Ranger in the West, there's one for John Muir Country Park, and there was the Warden at Abilady Bay, and that was it. In the summer we had like 5 months of two or three seasonal posts, but largely we were just on our own, you know. And that's changed, you know, tremendously over the next few years. And
Absolutely, we'll get to obviously the evolution of the Ranger service, but I suppose then coming back to your time looking down microscopes and everything else, it was maybe a bit of fate that I suppose those opportunities passed you up, and then you ended up in that seasonal position. So as a seasonal at that time, I'm interested to know what that kind of was like, and then how did that progress for yourself then into then the full-time kind of work?
I think it was slightly unusual for us, because there was myself and another guy who took the seasonal post based at Vogrie, and at the time they were going through a change in staff,
right?
And they had an assistant ranger, which is a post that existed back then, which doesn't exist anymore.
I suppose the title, I mean, essentially that's adapted and changed into seasonals, isn't it?
But a little bit, yeah. That was below a main grade ranger. You still full time post, but it was below that main grade post. You know,
Hollywood actually assistant rangers, Jeff. They keep that. Yeah, they keep that title, but very few, as you said. Yeah.
So they changed the grant funding so that they didn't have those posts anymore. You had to have the main grade ranger, whatever. So she was there, but she was doing the ranger training course, which at that time was a 12-week course spread over a year. So she was disappearing. And for the first month, the only other post that's there was a senior ranger. And that post had changed, and so for a month we didn't have a senior ranger. So I started for a week, and at the end of that week, she went off on this course, and we had no seats. So the only people on site were two brand new seasonal rangers, neither of whom had done any rangering before.
Of course.
So we were left to sort of get on with it ourselves, and decide what it was we were supposed to be doing for that. So it was definitely thrown in at the deep end. But that was great. To be fair, you know, we were able to manage the diary and sort out exactly what we were going to do, and you know. To be fair, we didn't have an awful lot of contact with the main council office. We were out on a limb, and they kind of left us to our own devices, to be honest. So that was a steep learning curve. Like I said, it was good. It was good stuff. And when senior ranger came in, he sorted a lot of things out. And you'll know him as well. It was Bob Tevendale.
Oh, right, yes.
Yeah, so, you know, he took one look at the diary and said... you're doing that? Oh, no, you're not. How many school groups have you got? You must be joking. You know. And we got a complete rearrangement due to him, and you could see, I learned a lot from him, actually. over those first few months.
No, it's funny hearing names like that come up. I mean, of course, our listeners won't know who we're talking about, but Pob Devendale now still works for Stark Environment Scotland within the team that Martin Gray manages, our previous guest, and you know, these familiar people that have been around quite a while and actually influenced, like yourself, the Ranger scene in current times as well, quite a lot. And without, again, people like Bob and yourself, you know, in many ways, a lot of the services wouldn't be the same, I'd like to think.
Yeah. No, certainly with Bob, at least, yeah. I would never put myself in that category, but, you know.
No. Cutting yourself short there.
No, thank you.
And that obviously led into then your kind of posterior to some degree. Yeah.
Well, partly the having that extra marine biology background and knowing this was like coastal stuff here.
Yeah.
Certainly, somebody I worked with in Midlothian, she recommended the post as well because she used to work out here, and she said gave me quite a lot of background to it. So I applied for the job, and as luck would have it, I got it.
I mean, it seems like a match made in heaven in that regards. Mm-hmm. And you've never looked back since, I don't think.
No, not really. It certainly changed what the sort of role I have has changed an awful lot. And like I said, you know, just the four of us, we did all the work.
Yeah.
And I was just in a conversation recently saying, you know, trying to work out what's going on the ground now. I have no idea sometimes. I have to keep going to various rangers and say, what are you doing at the moment? Are you doing what? Yeah, because trying to keep your finger on the pulse when there's all these rangers around and there's so much project work going around is really quite difficult. And it used to be, you know, that you know, if something was happening on a particular site, I'd be the person to deal with it.
Yeah,
you know,
of course.
And you know, I dealt with the early days of Leavenhall Links, for example, and some of the project stuff that was going on at Long Nidgery, and then, you know, and then we were having extra stuff done on railway walks and things, and it'd be me that was involved in those because I was the ranger,
of course.
But now it isn't, you know, because you know, I'm the senior ranger, and there are rangers there on the ground who cover these sites who know them backwards now. And you know, lived and breathed all these sites, and they know all the ins and outs of what's going on with these places far better than I do now. I'm away from that to some degree, so that can be quite tough sometimes to actually deal with. But I can imagine. You have to accept these things.
Yeah.
And luckily enough, I've got a great team. So you know,
we'll come on to your role now and the team. I suppose I want to look at then an interesting point, obviously, with your experience of a seasonal post kind of back in the day. Do you see many correlations with obviously the influx of seasonal posts that have been, we'll come on to grant funding as well, but do you see correlations between these types of, you know, people coming from lots of different backgrounds and maybe the same type of season, I guess, obviously be that visitor management heavy, but do you see any correlations there?
I suppose one of the things that happens as a countryside ranger is that not everybody comes through this background, but a lot of people coming through as a countryside ranger have come from a wildlife type background. But you have to acknowledge that a countryside ranger is very, very people orientated.
Yeah.
That's exactly what that post is. You know, you've got to be good with people because you are dealing with people all the time in whatever shape or form that is. So, you know, it's visitor management, but it's also, you know, in the educational side, the interpretation side, you know, you're dealing with people all the time. And although you're managing places and trying to, you know, to look at the conservation value of these, it's all places that people want to come and enjoy. Yep. And you're trying to promote that in a responsible fashion. So certainly the last 2 years, you know, because of the pandemic and because, you know, people discovering various pieces, you know, particularly here in East Lothian, where we've had a massive increase in visitor numbers and things. It's gone very visitor management heavy. And sometimes the bits and pieces like the interpretation side and the education side has gone out the window a little bit. Although you're still trying to educate the people that come
to
do things in the right way. It has been very intensive. But the if there are benefits that have come out of that, it is the acknowledgement that we've always had as rangers in Scotland of the benefit of seasonal staff and seasonal rangers. And the fact that over the last few years we've just lost all those posts, there's lots and lots of seasonal posts just disappearing left, right and centre. And then all of a sudden, you know, even the powers that be now are beginning to recognise the value in having the extra staff through those busy months to deal with some of that extra visitor pressure, you know. And I think I've spoke to rangers before who said, you know, things come in full circle. You know, we don't do this, and then a few years later we'll be doing it again, and then a few years later they'll be deciding, well, we don't do that.
Yeah,
and it comes around
yeah.
in these cycles, and I don't know whether that will continue, but it, certainly the value that you know or the rangers have had, you know, was always big in the past, and certainly in the old Countryside Commission days, it was, you know, we were doing an awful lot of work for the commission and what is now SNH after the merger, and you know, and fulfilling a lot of the their role almost,
yeah.
And so we were recognised as being valuable in that respect, and some of that value was just disappearing.
Of course.
And now I hope it looks like it's come back again. You know,
yeah.
that importance, and even, you know, at government level as well, that importance of rangers and their role, you know, in what is a fantastic countryside in Scotland. So
I mean, I'd like to think so. Having talked to yourself and George now, and I can, and obviously being different times, very much different times from when you both started, I think there's more similarities than what we, you know, that I've certainly noticed through, you know, now influx of seasonals, people coming from different backgrounds, and also now the almost reteaching kind of countryside code, how people interact with, particularly obviously people from the cities, awareness about the outdoor and green places, here. And, you know, we've got the kind of countryside parks on the coast, and then you've got a lot more urban places that rangers just now and have been over the pandemic. You know, new faces that have been using more local sites. So yeah, it is from how the ranger services developed back then, you'd like to think that we'll have a, you know, as you've stated, a kind of a resurgence in that as well, and a growth now, if anything, because of the value that's been acknowledged by not just ourselves but everyone else. And that kind of leads into quite nicely then, I guess, the ranger services growth, and how has particularly East Lothian, you know, Council's ranger service changed over the years?
Yeah, and so the we've got the oldest local authority ranger service in Scotland. So it's been going for 41 years now. I think it's been around 1970. First ranger, second ranger in Scotland.
And you fitted amazingly 30 years into that.
I'm not 30 years into that one now. That's great. Yeah, long time. And so Archie Matheson, who was the lone ranger, he was the only one who was here as a ranger for the whole of the county, basically, you know, until it started to build up. And I said there was four of us full time when I started. But now we have this, you know, including myself, there's 10 full time rangers, and you know, we used to have 11. We lost a couple of posts, and we managed to get one of those back again. So that's what's changed. So we have the county effectively divided up into areas with different people managing different areas, and with different sites in them and things. And that's changed enormously, just the number of people. We were able to do that, I think, just because of the strategic importance of East Lothian for a number of reasons. And visitors pressure is one thing. And the number of visitors we get from, not just quite a lot coming out from Edinburgh, obviously, but even from, you know, from further afield, and we have for years had that. So it's always been busy along the coast, particularly. But also the you know, with the number of designations, site designations. So, you know, when you've got the Firth of Forth, which is a Ramsar site, you know, a lot of the coast is designated SSSI for things like coastal grasslands.
Of course,
we've got geosites as well, which are important, and historic monuments as well, you know, things like Traprain Law, North Berwick Law, and places like that, which are all, you know, significant places. And we've managed to, as a result of that, to say, look, you know, we need this number of rangers to try and manage all this. And largely people said, yeah, you're quite right, here's, you know, here's some money, go ahead, sort of thing. Which has allowed us to build that up, and we also got extra rangers out of the Land Reform Act as well. We were able to make some seasonal posts full time as a result of that, in order to cover all the access stuff that we've been doing. So I think the other thing that's changed as well, and this is a real positive point as far as the way that we manage, is everybody is contained within the countryside unit. And I know that doesn't happen across a lot of local authorities, but we have the countryside rangers, biodiversity officer, access officer, all within the same group. We're all together as a group, And that's fantastic. You know, it works much, much better that way. And we were all, you know, working together over biodiversity and access and the general range of duties that we do. We work as a one big team. That's incredibly beneficial. And I know, having had conversations with people who, they've got a ranger service, which is in one department, and then the biodiversity office is in planning, and then the access office is in somewhere else, you know, sometimes trying to coordinate things is flipping difficult for them, you know, and I've had people complain to me saying, gosh, this is hard work doing it that way. So, you know, the foresight of East Lothian Council in terms of working that as a countryside unit, and also the way that the council values us as a countryside team as well, has been good too. You know, we get a lot of support from councillors in the county.
No, I've noticed a lot of that firsthand, and having been fortunate enough to be one of the seasonals this year, and one of the seasonals, seasonal rangers being brought in, I think for a lot of ranger services across Scotland, particularly this year, thanks to funding for the first time in a long time. Which we'll touch on kind of the importance and the impacts of that. But as you quite rightfully mentioned it, I think having worked elsewhere with other local authorities and other organisations, and now knowing the kind of bigger ranger scene in Scotland, East Lothian, thankfully and fortunately, has been, you know, as you stated, one of the oldest in regards to local authority, but has managed to, you know, survive all the changes and all the cuts and everything else, and has kept some of that value and importance based on, you know, partially to do with the geographical location, but also due to how it's been managed over the years and the right people being in position like yourself, which, you know, goes a long way actually to keep longevity within. And obviously, a lot of these things aren't necessarily, they can't be, they might be out of the ranger's hands and the ranger services' hands altogether. And you can never predict that. And, that's some of the shortfalls that have happened with, you know, ranger services, particularly before pandemic and then the years leading up to that. So,
We certainly skirted with the possibility of job cuts in the past. You know, where we've always managed to survive those, and which has been great, you know. Part of that has been through the, you know, I mean, in the past we've kept staff because of the external funding we had from SNH at the time, you know, and because we tick so many boxes, we always managed to get the full funding anyway from them, until, you know, it was decided, then the Scottish government decided that local authorities weren't allowed to have that external funding, and that has helped kill off a lot of ranger services around Scotland, as we know. We've always managed to survive that because the funding that's been coming in has come to us anyway through the overall grants that the local authorities get. Because, like I said, the countryside team has been highly valued by East Lothian Council. They've given us that funding in order to carry on with the team we've got, which is great.
Yeah, no, and it shows. And as I said, having worked here now, you know, I think there's a lot of in Scotland as a whole, with all the things that have happened to ranger services over the years, to have I'd like to think foundational still ranger teams and services about is what we need, and we will need going forward, because almost as if role models and exemplars where external, you know, government or whoever is, you know, influencing money and things can look at teams like that. And as these conversations are having now, I'm sure, about funding in future years, you know, you can say this is, you know, a ranger service that has, you know, of that size and the work and the impact that they can do. And, you know, it's having a ranger service like East Lothian Council that essentially can be looked at, and then almost, you know, with other ranger services, it's showing the value of what the teams that are needed elsewhere as well. And, you know, you'd hope to be able to replicate this model that we've got in other places that have used to be of such a, I suppose, large teams, etc., etc. But and with that, then obviously funding being a huge importance this year. What was that? Yeah, what was that like? Obviously, now having, when was the last time seasonals were about? I think.
Oh, crumbs, yeah, don't ask me to remember things like that. We did have, until not that long ago, it was only a few years back, we had maybe two seasons, I think. We had a couple. Yes, we did. Yeah, for specific sites.
Right.
But in the funding cuts we had to make, we had to make various funding cuts, and we were cutting budgets and things, and we ended up cutting the seasonal post as part of our savings scheme, because it was just the easiest we could do without losing full time staff, and but once you get to a point where you're asked to make further and further cuts, the only cuts you got left are staff ones. So like I said, we've managed to avoid that. But obviously the reason for the funding this year was just because of the incredible pressures of visitor management from the year before. And we worked through that, and certainly come the end of the summer, there was a lot of very frazzled rangers out there saying, God help us, we can't do that again.
Totally.
We were struggling at times, and to try to cope with the number of rangers on the ground that you needed to cover the massive amount of visitors that were coming, and the problems that we had with that visitor pressure.
Yeah, yeah.
So the funding for seasonals was a godsend, frankly. It was really something that we desperately needed. Mm. Otherwise, we'd have had so many rangers going off on long-term sick, I think, as a result. It would have been terrible. So, that's been fantastic. And, obviously there are meetings in place to see whether we can't keep that that level of seasonal ranger support certainly for next year, because we anticipate it being as busy next year, possibly.
As you kind of mentioned there, the I think all rangers to a degree once upon a time had the seasonals in place. And I think what's funny is I think my mentor Tracy Smith was again seasonal here, what seems like long ago now.
That's a while ago now, Tracy.
That's what I picture last time East Lothian having seasonals. But of course there's been more recent developments with more opportunities such as Kickstarters, which is a government scheme to bring on additional young people that are looking for work into it, which I think is a great scheme, and likes of with things like apprenticeships perhaps on the horizon will only grow and expand hopefully opportunities within teams. But of course, you've got to have, I think, firstly and foremost, seasonal positions back in some degree, with hopefully funding, and then the luxury, the hope of, and the aspiration of having then them kept full time or longer than 6 months a year. Certainly from my point of view, and I think a lot of teams have had seasonals back this year.
I think it's something that. In terms of rangering in Scotland, it was that whole concept of a career progression.
Yeah.
And people moving on from volunteering to seasonal posts to full time posts, and that was always there. It was certainly something that gave me an awful lot of satisfaction working at SWT with the team, because I got people on the on the Action for Jobs scheme.
Yeah.
But nearly all of them had come on that scheme deliberately.
Yeah,
you had to be unemployed for 6 months before you could join it, so they made themselves unemployed for 6 months. because it was a good way of learning about not just learning about countryside rangering, but also getting experience of different attributes of it. Quite a lot of them, at the end of their year or even before that, were moving on to seasonal posts or full-time posts as a result. And that was really satisfying to see that progression. And to a degree, that progression was happening, when I came here. We were seasonal rangers that moved on to other jobs within, if not ranger jobs, certainly countryside-related jobs as a result. You notice that now. Certainly here, if you look at the average age of rangers in East Lothian now, apart from Merrill, who just started there, everybody is, and I think we've only got one other person who's under 40. There are no young people here anymore, because there's just been no posts for the people to come into.
I think that's not necessarily a bad thing by any means, and I think there's a lot of other ranger services out there that are made up of the same kind of demographic age and everything else. But as we've touched upon with numerous people previously on the podcast, is you need that stepping stone. So certainly had historically, we need them kind of back now. And you have a lot of new interest as well in countryside careers and jobs, and a lot of the people, as you said, that have necessarily not had a wildlife, nature, countryside ranger type job before, or from other backgrounds, and now had this opportunity for seasonal jobs, which I think is really, you know, powerful and can, as you'll have saw
it's
yourself.
It's good to see again.
This year brought a new, a whole different perspective, I suppose, to the ranger team, and almost like a freshness.
Absolutely. And you know, you're, you know, I've been in this job for all those years, as you say, and you get too close to it sometimes, and you get somebody else coming in who, you know, with a completely different perspective, and they'll look and they go, "Why are you doing that? Why is this happening that way?" And you step back and you go, "Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
you know, it's because we always have done, or you know, and they've got fresh ideas and fresh ways of doing things, and you know, you learn as much from them as they hopefully learn from you, you know."
Yeah, and it's that thing of, as a seasonal, particularly, it's not, well, for me anyway, it's, you know, coming between different ranger jobs and things, not feeling intrusive in any way, I suppose, in that manner, and having a ranger team, which has been really nice this year, and, you know, in previous years as well, being welcome into the team with open arms, and I think, if anything, you know, more valued because of the pressures that were on ranger services last year. Which has been really nice for me, and hopefully for the other rangers in the team. So your role as a senior ranger then, I suppose, now is obviously managing, I suppose, the other rangers, which we can, you can touch upon. But yeah, I wonder, that's obviously a position in many ranger services that has vanished. And what, I suppose, is one of the reasons why the senior ranger position has been held here? And
I think it, yeah. I mean, I came to senior ranger post here not through any job advert or anything. They just created the post and said, and said, "You are now the senior ranger for the west of the county,"
right,
as it was at the time. And I gradually, you know, had more and more rangers in my team, which is just the west side of the county. And it was only when Bobby Anderson, who was the other senior ranger, when he left, that we were told we weren't going to be able to replace him. So I got told that, right, okay, you're now senior ranger for the whole county. It's like, oh wow, okay, thanks for that. So, you know, I've kind of fallen into these sort of roles, and the more that's happened, you know, and the bigger the area and the more rangers, the less influence you are having on what's going on the ground,
of
course, to a point.
As you've touched
on, because you keep having to keep in your head all the time, you know, okay, I've got all these staff, how are they getting on? Are they all right? Are they suffering at all? Do they need any support? Do they, what, you know, that's been harder over the last couple of years just because of the pandemic, and largely it's been all hands on deck on the ground. So the actual, possibly some of the senior ranger aspects of my job have just disappeared for that time, and I need to read to look at that again. It's worrying about, you know, the team who are largely on their own.
We, in
a sense, one of the ways we operate, because we divided up into areas and things, is as opposed to a team which is meeting regularly, we are a bunch of individual rangers with individual diaries, with individual jobs and things going on, which you are trying to sort of keep, remind them and keep them together, that they actually do work, work together in a unit, as well as being responsible for their own, you know, patches and diaries and things.
I suppose it's one of the, not differences, there'll be other ranger services out there, but all ranger services operate differently in that manner. And, you know, you've got more, fortunately, you know, due to the amount of rangers in Eastlow, then you have the luxury of being able to work at individual sites and have your own task management role and everything else. And, you know, you can get caught up in that, and as you quite rightfully said, become kind of your own man, ranger, one man.
The times when we come together are really, really important.
Of course.
So even if it's just for a short meeting, but you know, organising team tasks and things as well, to get people together, to get people, you know, as a group together to do that can be really quite important.
I hope the seasonals have, you know, helped in that regard.
No, absolutely.
As well.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we find that being able to work amongst the other seasonals, particularly on the East, and then actually, you know, being able to, you know, work with the full-time rangers. And
we wanted that to happen.
Yes.
Certainly as a, when we were appointing people, we were appointing people to sites, obviously.
Yes.
So, you know, you had the sites where you started or whatever, but we always said, you know, well, there's a definite team here. There's another team here, you know, let's make sure that does work, you know, they've worked together, not just with the seasons, but the full-time staff were involved in those places as well, you know, so that there was a much more input. And yeah, I mean, as a senior ranger, with 17 staff there, reporting back and as individuals. I mean, in the old days, certainly with seasonal rangers, and it didn't quite happen as much this time because of the number of full time staff we had.
Yeah.
But we would get a seasonal ranger in, and we'd be looking for somebody who we could say, right, here you are, you're responsible for Long Nudgee Bents. Goodbye. See you in 6 months.
Yeah.
You know, we needed people who could hit the ground running.
Yeah.
You know, who didn't need their hand held every 5 minutes and could get on with stuff. And given that the initial sort of training or introduction or whatever, where they'd be there for, you know, somebody be with them every day for a couple of weeks or whatever, and then it'd be, there you go, you know.
No, so, I think it has worked well.
Yeah. And up to a point, and we knew that partway through the season we would be able to, you know, a lot of the full-time staff are in, you know, heading into offices to rewrite management plans and reports and other things, safe in the knowledge that the seasonal rangers who are out there can cover a lot of the stuff they would normally have to do.
Yeah.
You know, and that's
been
great.
You know, necessarily how it should be, and, you know, it allows the ranger service to continue its wide variety of tasks that it should be able to, in theory, uphold every year.
And we hopefully are we're going to be faced with COVID for a long time, for forever probably as well, so, you know, this is always going to be there, but we are hopefully getting back into some of the stuff that we used to do, and some of the education stuff we used to do, and the interpretation bits and pieces we used to do, is slowly coming back in again after we had, you know, effectively, you know, abandoned all that for the last couple of years. And that's we've been able to sort of look at that more because we've had the seasonal rangers as well, so that's been great.
Yeah, and I suppose I'm interested in knowing is having talked about Mike's senior ranger role recently in the regional parks, they've obviously got a much smaller team, Mike often finds himself, he is, you know, often out and about doing a lot of the stuff as well as the paperwork and everything else. But when you obviously do get the chance and everything else, what's, I suppose, still your favourite aspect of the senior ranger role, or has been over the years?
The senior ranger role, I mean, I like working with the people. I mean, I've got a great team, you know, and they are all really, really, you know, very experienced, hardworking people, and I rely on them a hell of a lot for stuff because, you know, let's face it, a lot of them are better rangers than I am, if not all of them. And, you know, they've got tremendous experience in things now to carry on and do that job, and they know what they're doing and they do it well.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't have to manage them at all. You know, I just have to, you know, make sure, you know, that everything is still ticking over and things, you know. But we're quite strange in the way that I said that it's great having a whole team, including biodiversity access and whatever. In effect, a lot of the senior rangers either have disappeared, like you said, or are operating more like a countryside manager.
Yeah.
So we have a countryside manager anyway.
Yes.
Who is responsible for the whole management of the ranger service and the other bits and pieces that go along with it.
Yes.
In many places, that's a senior ranger's role. Senior ranger sits in an office and deals with facts and figures and getting money in and all that sort of stuff. I don't do that, you know. Mm. I have an input into some of that stuff,
of course,
but you know, and I'm involved in some of the meetings with the office staff and others in the progression of where we're going countryside wise, but that's countryside manager's role, not mine. It can be sometimes quite hard to work out what exactly is expected of me, because although I'm expected to be a senior ranger and worrying about staff, I'm also expected to be out there doing stuff.
Yeah.
So what is the balance between those two? And I've been doing this for years. I don't know what the balance is. I still haven't got that right. And it probably changes from year to year depending on what's going on, you know.
No, I suppose I just wanted to highlight there the differences within, you know. I've kind of been talking about with previous guests and other people is that in Scotland our framework of rangers, you know, nowadays is mainly consistent of just full-time rangers or, you know, if it happens, seasonal rangers, and then you have the kind of ranger manager, and, you know, you don't have that senior ranger position in there. But, you know, once upon a time, there's probably a lot more senior rangers or a lot more larger structures within a ranger service.
And the old post of chief ranger existed in a couple of places. You know, Pentland Hills had a chief ranger, really? Fife had a chief ranger, that post has disappeared.
Mm. And I guess that, from my international guests and, you know, learning about international ranger services and, like, South America and everything else, they, again, have their own, very similar, but their own kind of framework. And, you know, they have superintendents, which is probably, you know, the equivalent of perhaps our senior ranger or ranger manager. So, yeah, I it is an interesting aspect of how we operate in Scotland, certainly. Mm. Coming on to visitor management then, we've obviously highlighted the strains on that had been on the ranger service last year, and you know, ranger services across Scotland as a whole, based on, you know, more people discovering what was local green spaces and visiting, you know, places in general in Scotland because they weren't able to go abroad. What has been some of the visitor management kind of strategies in East Lothian, and what have been the real focuses for protecting the coast?
Two things, really. I suppose one was part of the visitor management is the number of people driving to sites to come there. So, you know, car parking and trying to facilitate, you know, really busy days when people are really struggling to find places to park their car to come out. The sites have become more important in terms of visitor pressure, largely through social media and this work. And the number of people in the last 2 years who I've come across who've never been to East Lothian before, but they've seen it on social media and said, "Oh, you can go there, can you?" So that's one aspect. The other aspect was the amount of camping that's been going on, and really struggling to deal with what people think of as wild camping, but clearly isn't. You know, they drive down there, they drag, you know, gallons and gallons of kit out with them. You know, there's massive frame tents pitched up in woodlands and dunes and whatever. So knowing that we really haven't been able to stop that in some respects up till now, you know, we've been trying to manage it in the best way we can. So the only, you know, and we've done a reasonably good job in that, I think. We've managed to almost get it down to people just not leaving litter around. You know, for litter has not been a big issue for us.
No.
In relation to the people camping, people have genuinely been pretty good at getting rid of their own litter. And I think that's a face-to-face. You know, people have been out. And like I said, it's been difficult for us. We've been out all the time, going down to these places, talking to people that are camping, trying to get them before they start camping, even, you know, meeting them in the evenings when they're turning up and saying, "Can you do blah, blah, blah?" Yeah. Getting them to actually pitch tents in the areas which is of least damage, reducing the number of fires that have been happening. That sort of stuff has been, and the team have been fantastic in doing that, and that has helped us no end. Although it's been, you know, really tiring type work to be out there all the time, every day, trying to do this. You know, that's, like I said, going back to the seasonal rangers, we couldn't have done it this year without having that seasonal support. And we've had really, really busy days when there's been tents everywhere and you know, and you're having to go around and say, "Yeah, you've got a fire in the wrong place. Can you move a level?" You know, whatever. If I had a criticism about the funding for the seasonal rangers, it was too late. We couldn't employ seasonal staff until the end of June, know, which we needed people before that, really. But we managed. The upshot is having seasonals till through to the end of October. And part of the autumn work has been going back and actually finding all these fire sites that are ever there and trying to repair them all and getting it back to what it was before this happened. So, you know, a hell of a lot of site management, know, that we're having to do over this autumn time, and having that extra support from seasonal staff to do that has been great. So
it's been a really nice season, actually, and despite obviously the busy end of the summer, having never worked coastal before for myself, it's been such an amazing experience alongside the team. And, you know, despite obviously all the issues and everything, I've quite enjoyed tackling them. And it's been quite nice to see the ranger services approach, even other ranger services approached, of this new, not new issue, but this more prominent issue in regards to, you know, wild camping issues, fires, and, you know, and the interesting thing being, actually, there is, you know, most people associate issues with litter, but actually it's been fairly good. And you'd hopefully think that's down to the people on the ground, such as, you know, face-to-face ranger engagement. But no, what are some of the, just briefly, before we lead on to our kind of final question, what are some of the thoughts then behind continuing to tackle these visitor management issues in the years to come?
Yeah, yes, well, better education is one thing.
Of course.
Improving, a lot of social media sites give totally inaccurate information about the whole concept of wild camping, for example. I suppose it's a bit of a bugbear of mine is you know, people saying, oh, I'm wild camping. It's, well, you know, you're not actually, because you know, you're in a massive tent. It's, you know, you could, you're in a tent you could see from outer space, frankly. You know, it's bang in the middle of a path. It's not discreet. It isn't, you know, it's really not wild camping. What I want to see is people like SNH actually coming out with a proper definition of what exactly is wild camping, because we haven't had that sort of yeah. background support. We're having to, and us and other authorities are having to come up with our own definitions of what's wild camping, yeah. frankly, yeah. in order to try and do it. So we have got management rules, yes. which, you know, we need to start using, really, or having there in our back pocket as saying, this is actually what we think is wild camping. So if you're not doing this, you shouldn't be here, go away, you know, in whatever respect. To control it, we need to control. We are looking at the whole concept of overnight parking, which technically yes. we have bans on overnight parking in our car parks, but we've never enforced them.
Yeah.
It's can
yeah.
we enforce these now? Because that's part of the issue, is people turning up with, you know, van loads of kit to come and camp and things with that, and they leave the car there overnight, and that's one issue that we're looking at as well.
Yeah.
And converting the management rules into bylaws
yes.
as well. So introduction of bylaws is something. We used to have bylaws on all our sites. These largely went out of the window when the Land Reform Act came in, because they counteracted a lot of yes. our bylaws anyway. We've never gone back to those again, but we're now looking at doing those again. Mm. Largely because the bylaws can be enforced by the police.
Of course.
Whereas management rules are in-house. so, you know, it's useful to have that sort of police support if we need to. You know, we never had to use the bylaws in the past. Very, very rarely. We could say, look, there is a bylaw for yes. this, and people go, oh, okay. And they, you know, and 99 times out of 100, they go, oh, okay, sorry about yes. that, blah, 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 yeah. blah. And they'd move on or whatever, stop whatever they were doing, you know, because the bylaws stopped them from doing that.
Yeah.
So we, you know, it was just there as a, you know, as a tool to use, but they can be useful in that respect.
Yeah, 100%. And mm-hmm. I think, you know, these are all issues everyone's been talking about and listening. And as yourselves mm-hmm. have been, you know, I'd like to thank you, Slothian, has been used, you know, as an example where other ranger services and other authorities have mm. been looking at it and seeing how we've been tackling these things and what our future plans are, but vice versa, you know, there's a lot to learn from other ranger
Absolutely.
Services and authorities
yeah, yeah,
out
yeah,
there
yeah,
as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's something where I don't think we're quite done talking about this year in particular, and it's only going to be something that's more talked about in
And
years to
we'll
come.
Probably come up at the ranger rendezvous in a couple of weeks' time. You know, it's where one of the things we'll end up talking about, you know, discussion with other Scottish rangers is, how did you do this? How did you do that? You know, and yeah. learning from each other in some respects. Yeah.
Which leads us fantastically on to our final question. Which
yeah, did you
is,
see what I did there? Yeah,
that was a yeah, beautiful segue into, you've obviously have played quite an important role and carried, I want to say, the Scottish Council of Rangers Association in previous years through, you know, as a lot of the heads and chairs of SCRA, tough times for, you know, rangers as a whole in Scotland. Mm, mm. So what was your role with SCRA? I suppose, when was that? And what was, I suppose, its importance during that time?
It started in the 90s, mid-90s. and I've been to a couple of training courses and events and things.
Right.
And I met a few rangers and stuff. Yeah, yeah. But and I was a member of SCRA. I hadn't got involved. But Max Ramsey, who was a ranger, Fife ranger at the time, she sweet talked me into covering her job, her role as the representative to Scottish Environment Link.
Right, yes.
And because she did an exchange with a New Zealand ranger, so she went to New Zealand for a year, I think it was. And so she said, can you cover me for a year? Can you cover me for a year? Well, Mags, bless her cotton socks, never came home. So she was back briefly, and then she went back to New Zealand full time as a job. As far as I know, she's still there. I've no idea where, you know, somebody may be able to tell me in the future, you know, what exactly she's doing there now. So I ended up staying in the role as the that role was part of SCRA Council. So I started going to the SCRA Council meetings and things as a result. and you know, helped out with various bits and pieces. And then I took on the chairs wrong for 5.5 years.
Yeah.
It was not. It wasn't my first choice, to be honest with you. It was more because there was nobody else that was prepared to do it, and I thought, you know, well, we need.
Yeah.
We you know, we're in a sort of tough time for Rangers at the moment, and we need to keep this moving. And so I took on the role as chair. Determined, because Niall before me, who worked as a Trojan for Scra, he did everything for Scra. Possibly to, in some cases, to you know, taking on too many roles himself.
Yeah.
And I was determined I wasn't going to do that. Despite all the good work he did, and he did some fantastic stuff. I couldn't follow that and didn't have the time to devote to doing, you know, the old maxim, if you want a job, if you want to do a job, if a job is worth doing, do it yourself.
Yeah, and
it's,
I mean,
it's
you
that
were
one, and you can't do that, you know. And I was at the time I was senior ranger for the west of the county, and after the 5 years, I thought, well, it's coming close to time anyway. And then also, you know, Bobby left, and I had to take on the extra duties that he, and I didn't have time to do that, so I left, left Scra without a chair for a whole year before George stepped up and took it.
Yeah.
So it was really, I was really doing a holding role, if you like, until, you know, we could, you know, start to get other things moving. So that was what I saw my job as, is just trying to keep it together.
Mm.
And try to convince other people that it was a good idea that they came on Scra Council.
Yeah.
So we got a couple of new faces in that time, and we were doing things like the Junior Ranger Award, and things was coming through and that sort of stuff. So there were things happening, which is good, and we were getting some of that support for that. Like I said, it hadn't been my first choice, but I thought I'd better do something. So I took that role on, I have half a role, if you like, with Scottish Environment Link still. So I field a lot of the stuff from that and pass it on, or answer the questions as necessary if I can. I've not been able to get to all the meetings and things. I really haven't.
That's the tricky balance of taking up these voluntary positions within mm-hmm. Scra, not being Scra Council, and chairing such an important cause, and everyone's working at the same time as well, in many cases, like George's, he's obviously no longer working, but you know, you still have a life at the end of the day.
Well, afterwards. There was that as well. Yes. There was that as well. So I was lucky in that, you know, my boss gave me time to do some of this stuff. You know, I negotiated with him the number of meetings I could go to per year for Scottish Environment, Lincoln Scra, and things. But it got to the stage where everything was, you know, just too busy. So I certainly try to get to there's a main gathering of Link every year, which is, you know, defining what happens, what Scottish Environment Link are going to concentrate on over the next year or so. And so those and the AGM. So those are quite good meetings to go to. So I usually try to get to that one. But some of the other ones in between I've struggled to get to, and had to send my apologies in. But that's the way things are.
Absolutely.
It's still a valuable group to be involved with. We've got an awful lot of support from being within that group. And you know, let's be fair, they've benefited from our membership as well at times. So it's still very important stuff.
Would you say that's one of your most favourited or most cherished aspects of your time as chair, or is there any singular one thing that you're most proudest of?
The things I enjoyed most were actually organising the rendezvous, really. although that can be quite stressful. Certainly we had the one rendezvous where we were within about 4 or 5 days of cancelling it because we had not enough people coming, you know.
Really? Wow.
And typical Countryside Rangers, you know. We got lots of bookings in the last, you know, the 4 or 5 days running up to the actual event, so we managed to run it without making a massive loss. So
I don't think those things have changed, to be honest.
No, it's quite hard work trying to get, you know, Rangers to come to these things. You've got to be really well organised and push, you know. Getting Rangers to do things like herding cats, but but they've all of the ones we've done over the last few years have been great. You know, they've actually been really positive things. And have had good subjects to deal with and things. Mm. And one of the best aspects of them is just being able to meet lots of other Rangers.
Yeah.
Okay, it's worth it for coming along for the talks and the workshops and things, which are clearly, you know, important.
Yeah.
But the actual you know, mixing with other rangers and discussing things and finding things out, and that networking is just invaluable, you know, because it just doesn't happen any other time.
Yeah, I think it's, well, one of the main reasons I'd like to think nowadays that most people do attend these things.
Yeah.
What's been your favourite rendezvous? Is there any most favourable of them all?
What was the favourite one? It was it was probably Culzean, actually.
Really?
I really enjoyed the Culzean one. We had... I think it benefited from having, you know, at least four or five people on the organising committee. And they were really sort of enthusiastic about it and went, yes, great, it's all, you know. The National Trust for Scotland were the hosts for that one,
right.
and they, you know, embraced it wholeheartedly, and were, you know, gave significant amount of time to a couple of their officers to help to deal with it all and things. So that was great, and it's that support that you need. But it was great. It was great being at Culzean. You know, it was a place I didn't know very well. But all the talks and workshops were fantastic. It was, you know, it all worked really, really well.
I noticed actually they've advertised for a head ranger, another title or, you know, job role.
And that's just for Scotland,
So yeah, funnily enough, you mentioned Culzean.
It's interesting given the number of job cuts.
Yes, you know, of course. But yeah, these things prop up when sometimes in all familiar places.
I know.
Just one last thing then, before we finish up. What would something that you would, I suppose, a bit of advice or something you'd say to other rangers that are out there, or people interested in engaging with SCRA, or potentially, you know, what will become inevitably crucial when, you know, a scenario like chair steps down, or, you know, people fall out of place, you know, are potentially able to take up positions like this. What would you say to them?
I clearly, you know, having been involved with SCRA for so long, I believe in it as a fabulous organisation, and I think it's something that every ranger should be involved with and should be a member of. I think being involved with the work of SCRA as well is putting back something into a profession. The profession's a vocation. People come to this, you know, sometimes you have to try and explain that to people, sometimes councillors, you know, working in the local authority, you know, they look at it and go, oh, yeah, it's a ranger. And you go, yeah, but this person's coming as a ranger, not because, you know, they're not coming it for money or for whatever. It's because it's the vocation. It's wanting to actually do something about the, you know, the natural world.
Yeah.
And interpret it, explain it to people, and manage it in a way which is, you know, where it's still going to be around for, you know, for future generations and things. That's where it comes from, people wanting to do that. It's definitely vocational. But also, you know, you know, taking on that role is great, but also I think it's worthwhile putting something back in for other people.
Yeah.
And the one way of doing that is being involved in SCRA and pushing, you know, sometimes politically as well, pushing what the value is of having countryside rangers around, you know. And we've got one of the best, we've always had in Scotland one of the best, if you see Scotland as a whole ranger service, for example, we've got one of the best ones in the world, you know. It was based on a model which worked, you know, as a countryside, as a whole Scottish, you know, service, if you like, albeit rangers being employed by lots of different people and lots of different organisations, they were all following the same sort of guidelines and things. So wherever you went in Scotland and you met a ranger, you knew what they did, you knew what their background was, because they were all doing the same sorts of things. And that came out of the whole Countryside Commission for Scotland's, you know, work that they did in wanting this. And you know, that role has been copied by others, like for Denmark, for example, looked at it and said, we want to do what they did, you know, and they came up with exactly the same model. And others have looked at us and said, yeah, that's great. You know, over the last few years, that's been diluted an awful lot because of the lack of grant aid.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, because of, you know, posts being lost, rangers being asked to do many other duties they wouldn't normally. So that you know, up to a point you can go around and you find a countryside ranger, you might not necessarily know what they did compared to others, because that's been diluted a bit and they lost some of that angle. I'm hoping, if there's anything that's going to happen, and I know you put that down as a possible question, is that we come back to that again.
Yes.
That we come back to, you know, this whole Scottish concept, you know, of rangers in Scotland are doing this sort of amount of work, and this is what they're doing, and this is how they're involved, and you know what you're getting, and it's valued in that way. And I think that is, hopefully, if we get anything out of this pandemic and things in terms of rangers, that's what we get. That acknowledgement that there is this whole you know, group of people around Scotland doing the same sorts of job and putting that effort in.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, well put. Here. As George said, sometimes I think, you know, we're living on the accomplishments of the past, but I think it's one thing to not forget that, as you said, once upon a time, long before my time, we were an example for many other, not just within Scotland, but UK and other European and other, even out with that, as a model, Ranger Services. So, you know, the importance, lesser so in recent years because of the struggles and difficulties and, you know, the voluntary time that SCRA has given, you know, we can only do as much as our members and the people that are a part of it. So, you know, as that hopefully grows and builds again, we can achieve more and, you know, show the real impact of what used to be. Yeah,
absolutely.
No, it's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you very much for that.
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed that. And it's, yeah, always nice to get to hear the full story behind, you know, unique characters and people and within the Ranger community in Scotland, such as yourself, Roger. It's, again, my season's shortly coming to an end, but we'll hope that positions like this come up again and that other people like myself will be able to experience what is the joy of working for East Lothian Council Ranger Service.
I hope so too.